Welcome back to another episode of the Real Life Carry Podcast, episode number 131. I am Big G. I'm joined by wee Mike Szabo. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And we have actually a guest, don't we? Tell us what's on the episode. What's on the menu today?
Well, as you know, we have guests from time to time, and this week we have one of our caddies who actually made a switch from the dark side. He used to be in caddy management. Not only that, I know, but he's elevated his game to actual caddy, and now he's actually elevated even further, and he's going for one of the tours or a couple of the tours.
We're excellent. Talk about it. Yes, we have a guest, folks, so I hope you enjoy this. His name is Chris Rose.
Welcome, Chris.
Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Woo! He looks very unimpressed with that.
Yeah, like, not at all. Good technology, bro.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Have you guys noticed what I've done today with the cables for the microphones?
Yeah, I see green, I see blue, and I see red.
I've got red.
Chris Rose, red roses.
Red rose.
Big G, Scotland, blue.
And the Italian green.
I was thinking Chipotle green, but you know what I mean?
Guacamole.
Yeah, that's it. So welcome to the Real Life Carry Podcast, Chris. You are a listener, so you know how things work in this, don't you?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
Tell us, how did you get into caddying?
I started caddying as a kid at the Belmont Country Club, which is outside of Boston.
You're from over his neck of the woods?
My neck of the woods. Did you grow up there?
I did. I grew up in Arlington, Massachusetts.
That's awesome.
Four sons of my parents, and they were all within 4 years of each other, so my mm-hmm. mom was not having it sitting around the house all summer. So
no. Get out of the house.
Get your ass down to that club and caddy. But it was very much the caddy versus the members. It was very different than caddying now.
How old were you at that time then?
Probably 12 or 13, maybe. Oh. Yeah, 12, I'd say. I was young, very young.
Large leather bags.
Yes. There was no such thing as a changeout.
Uphill all day.
They were called hot Z bags were the thing that were in then, and they would look like mini staff bags and uh-huh. very thin straps, and there was no such thing as a scale or changeout or cart jobs.
One or two bags?
I started at one because the bags weighed more than I did at that point. I was probably 100 pounds dripping wet. And yeah. I think we got $15 a bag, and there was a no tipping policy at the club.
Ooh.
Yes. The only time I got a tip at that club was, I think it might have been the last loop I ever did, and it was in high school, and it was a lightning storm. No joke. And
thanks for sticking it out with me, buddy.
Thanks for risking your life. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, here's $10. Go on your way. But it was a really, really cool experience. It taught me how to move around a golf course and taught me a lot about
people.
How to caddy. Yeah, people as well. Yeah.
How many members would be at that club?
I would guess there's probably about 300 to 350. And just want to give my brother a shout out. He's the superintendent now. He started as a caddy there. And my whole family's worked there at one point or another.
So you still go back and play that course?
I was just there last week, yes.
And you played it?
Nice. I did not. I just walked it.
Gotcha. That's
circumstances.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. But I love that course. It's a Donald Ross course. It's fantastic. Pretty exclusive. Which is probably a tier below like Myopia or Brookline or Essex or whatnot. But it's an excellent golf course.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. What's your brother called?
My brother's name is Mike Rose.
Mike?
Yeah.
I was guessing he'd have the same last name. Yeah. I was hoping. And how did you find the members towards you as a caddy? Were they nice? Were they engaging? Were they just like...
I want to say it was probably 50-50 nice to not so nice, but the 50 not so nice definitely left a mark on me at some point. You know,
it was like those mean Bostonians.
Yeah, it was, you know, if you couldn't find the ball or squirmed a little bit when they were hitting, you were going to hear about it for sure. And then there were some that were super nice. But I remember Caddy Day was a huge day for us, and it was just like the movie Caddyshack and
absolutely.
All that. We got to the run of the place for one day of summer, and that was the highlight of the summer. And they also had a member caddy tournament, which was fun. Nice. I remember playing in that a few times. Yeah, it was good.
What's your playing background? Are you a good player? Do you play a lot?
I was pretty good. I probably got down to a 5 handicap, and that was during before I had kids, so that was probably in the 1990s.
Gotcha.
I mean, enough to speak the language, but never, I played like city amateurs and whatnot, but never, like, I couldn't get down any much lower than that, because I really never liked practicing. I just wanted to go play with my friends and gamble.
Yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, all right, okay.
I figured if I could break 80, it was a good day, and, when I played well, I kept it in the mid-70s, maybe low 70s if I played well, and then it kind of ran its course. I got super into it. Now I'm terrible. I mean, rarely break 100.
Would you get playing privileges at the course every Monday, or was it?
Yeah, it was closed on Monday, so you could play then, and then you could play. If you went really early in the morning, you could play.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool.
And was it, how many months a year was the season?
They'd close probably first frost, so roughly, I want to say, November, beginning of November, and then they would open right around this time of year. I think they just opened last Tuesday.
Okay.
As a matter of fact.
And what is the date, Zabo? Do we have, have you worked your stuff out?
I think it's April 17th today.
You know, Zabo's been struggling with dates, times.
Well, this job, boys, is like, I don't know what day it is half the time. And
girl,
I love it.
Every day is Monday.
I love
it. Every day is Monday. But every day is Friday, too.
I know. I just love it. I love not like living in the confines of, oh, no, I got to go to work tomorrow. And yeah, that's a wonderful thing about our job.
So you'd have caddied there for how long?
I would probably say 4 or 5. And then sporadically, you know, I mean, it would like when I got into high school, I was, you know, doing other things and I wouldn't caddy that much. But if I wanted to stick a few bucks in my pocket, I'd go down there.
What other things were you doing?
Oh, what did I do? It's probably not suited for this podcast.
Well, you'd be surprised.
Because that's so funny because
I love to party.
When I was growing up, we loved to party too.
Yeah.
And kind of still do. But I was, come rain or shine, I was at the golf course every, I don't think I had a weekend. I haven't had more than a dozen weekends off since 1995.
I hear that.
Never missed it.
Wow, that's impressive.
So
yeah, I didn't start getting into like playing golf seriously until probably just after high school, and then, you know, played a lot, and it was pretty remarkable to see how fast you can get decent at it if you put in the time. You know, go from like, I think it was 1 year I broke 90, the next year I broke 80, the next year I broke par, mm-hmm. literally like to the month of that year. So I mean, if you put the time in.
When you were growing up, did you save your money or did you just blow it?
Oh God, I could no. I had a problem with cash, let's just say that.
What caddy doesn't.
I'm a lot better now.
Yeah, good. When did you go to college after high school?
No, it took me 5 years to get out of high school. Gotcha. Mike, college was not an option for
Chris
Rose.
Too, buddy.
Yeah,
been there too.
I was a bit of a train wreck.
When did you make it out this way?
I moved to California in 1989, right after the Loma Prieta quake, and I moved to Santa Cruz.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I moved to Santa Cruz sight unseen with my brother and a buddy. We bought a $1,000 van, which seemed like a real nice van at that time.
Okay, uh-huh. So for people that don't know, there was a massive earthquake in 1989.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Like
yes.
A huge one.
Yes. Huge one.
And Santa Cruz is how far from where that was?
It's the epicenter.
There you go. And you just thought, hey, I'll move from Boston. You must have. I know.
What are the chances it's going to happen again?
I know exactly. He was wasting his money on a lot of drinking drugs, wasn't he? Let's go to Santa Cruz.
Wow. We didn't move to San Diego because we thought there was too much party in there. We moved to Santa Cruz. It's pretty ironic.
Keep it tame. Let's move to Santa Cruz.
Because I've known my mom's cousin lived in San Francisco when this happened.
Right.
What was the was a devastation?
The town was completely different. I mean, downtown was rubble. A lot of the bridges were closed. So my introduction to it, Gordon, was just like completely different than it is now. A lot of the roads were closed. It was really hard to find a job.
Yeah.
We lived in the van in New Brighton State Beach for a few weeks.
I'll bet that smelled good.
Yeah. This is like pre-cell phone, obviously, pre-internet, pre-ATM cards. You just had a few bucks in our pocket. It was a cool adventure, yeah.
And was it your brother Mike?
No, a brother Brian and a high school buddy of ours. They both.
Oh, so it was three in a van.
Yeah, so it was the five-year high school guy, and then Joe had flunked out of University of New Hampshire after like several warnings, and then my brother, we decided to come out, and my brother's like, well, I'm not going to miss that trip. He dropped out of UMass, and we drove out here.
And there you go. Did they end up staying out here?
Joe's still here. Brian now lives in Tuscaloosa. Yeah, he bounced around a bit.
Where's Tuscaloosa?
Alabama. His wife's a professor at the University of Alabama.
Oh, yeah. Good for him.
Okay. Yeah. So you set up out there.
And then you met your wife out here then?
I did. I met her at the Catalyst, the Santa Cruz love story.
Oh, the Catalyst. Still there. Great venue.
I think she was drunk. Yeah. Had her beer goggles on.
You definitely probably were, huh?
She had a boyfriend, and we just had to get rid of him. And we're coming up on 30 years this month. Yeah.
30 years. And how many
kids
do you
have?
What a lucky
lady. Two sons, Theodore, a.k.a. Theo, and then Nick is 25. Sorry, Theo's 26.
And do you still live in Santa Cruz?
I do. We still live in the same house. We bought a house in Soquel, which is just above Capitola. Yeah. We bought that in the mid-90s, which was a game changer, so to speak. Yeah,
gotcha. And, you know, I've only known you since you really started caddy management, which was not too long ago, right?
2017.
So, yeah, I mean, you're talking not terribly long ago. What were you doing in between that?
So in between that, for work, I was a printing press operator by trade, which I learned to do in that stint in high school, and it provided I'm one of the few people to use my high school education as a career. I a large format commercial printing press operator, and I worked mostly up in the Bay Area for the first about probably 15 years of that. Mm-hmm. And then I found a job in Santa Cruz, which was a great job. It was a collective, so it was employee owned. So we got 6 weeks paid vacation and full benefits for the family. And it was a great job because I worked from 7 a.m. till 2:30 p.m. and could surf in the morning before work. And then I coached high school basketball at Soquel High School for almost 2 decades. So
nice.
That allowed me to the time to do that and time to spend a ton of time with my kids, which was great.
And zero golf in here.
No, I stopped playing. It was like way off the, once I had the kids, it was off the table. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Did you get them into golf?
They got into it after. They played mostly just like, you know, basketball, baseball and surfing growing up and like did junior lifeguards. And then they got into it like probably mid high school. Like my son Nick played on the golf team after he was really into basketball, but he'd play golf just to screw around in the spring. And you know, his team was a bit of a train wreck. You know, they'd be like one Division I kid from another school, and then be Nick shooting 120 next to him. The kid would be grinding out. You know, just very quite the juxtaposition of players.
Gotcha. And, so yeah. You were commercial printing press up until you decided to make the jump into caddy management.
People always told me, you got to use your personality. You got to get away from that machine and all that. And I didn't know what to do. It was like, find something else to do. And people said that I should be in sales. And I thought, that must mean they think I'm really full of shit. Yeah. And I saw an ad on Craigslist, actually, for a caddy manager.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And so I was like,
that's where we advertise.
I caddied when I was a kid. And I remember our caddy master, John Mahan. And that'd be a great job. And I applied. And honestly, getting that job was like, I think you could get hired by the CIA easier. And they put you through a whole ringer. I mean, I remember having to do a Skype interview and all this stuff. And finally, I get hired.
I think you would probably be a little harder to get into the CIA than a Skype interview. I'm just going to, you know, come on. No. I think you're overselling it.
It is. My point being, it was a ridiculous amount of hoops to jump through to become a caddy manager. Yeah, so I got hired by them. I started in, I think, December 2017.
16, 17. Uh-huh. I'll have to jump in here, right? Because the first time I met Chris,
okay,
you know, I used to spend my winters back home.
Oh, yeah, so you weren't here when he started then, probably.
Yeah, December, January, February, I'm pretty much gone.
Okay.
So, because things have changed in where we work. There's a lot more work in the winter than there used to be. They market the place very differently. And so I'd be away, and I remember turning up mid-February, and I turn up to the wee course, and I was like, oh, fresh blood.
Hey, you know, I'm Big G. How are you?
Yeah. And I says, how long have you been working here? And I thought he said 14 days, right?
Yeah.
And he says, today's like my last day. The fact that I'm always pretty much turning up 4 minutes before a tee-off time, we didn't really have more than 30 seconds to spend. And he says, nice to know you. You'll never see me again.
That what he said?
Yeah.
I think it was the last loop I had to fill that day too.
So you weren't planning on looping after. You were just going to be done.
No. And so they made a rule that you could not jump.
Yes, correct.
Switch teams.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us a wee bit about actually the carry management in the first though. Like, what was it like
managing why was it, you know, that was a short stint, but longer than a lot. We've gone through, I've been here 19 years, and I think we've gone through 100 caddy managers.
There's the senior caddy at Pebble that has a list, and I'm on that list somewhere, and it's staggering how long it is.
Oh,
the job
crazy.
Is dreadful. It's just like you.
be honest.
You show up at 5 a.m. and then the phones start blowing up and emails, and you know, caddies trying to move their report times, and I know it's just golf, and I know it's nobody's going to lose their lives over it, but it can become ridiculously stressful.
Oh, I can see it highly stressful. Yeah.
And so you right from the moment you walk into the office, you just get bombarded with a lot of, you know, stuff and moving things around, and the system is still a bit archaic. You're still putting eraser in pencil to paper. So I figured out pretty quick that job was not.
It wasn't for Chris Rose.
No. And I tried to like it. I really, really, really like being on the property. That's a lot of realies. But I really like being on the property. It is staggering. You know, the Wee Course and
Pebble. Great.
Yeah, I mean, they're awesome. And I liked working with the pro shop guys. And I really enjoyed being around the caddies.
Mm-hmm.
I think I fit in really well with them and you know, had good rapport with them and whatnot. But it also, if you make a mistake, there's guys that would let you know right away. And, you know, I remember one guy, like, call me out the next day for a mistake I made the day prior. And I'm like, well, why didn't you just tell me that? I really don't care.
Caddies hold grudges.
If Gordon went before Mike, or Mike was supposed to go before Gordon, just tell me. Yeah. But no, you did this yesterday. I'm like, dude. So it can be ridiculously stressful.
I would say that the 14 seconds of rapport we had was very good. So
pretty
I can't, I can't fault you. And I would have to agree with you that the way that some of the caddies treat the managers is diabolical.
It's abysmal. I see both sides of it, because some of the management is poor at best. But there's no easy way to caddy manage. That's the problem. It's not an easy job.
You can't get it right.
It's changing constantly, and it's typically not the manager's fault. But caddies can be a mean bunch when things don't go their way.
Oh, yes, yeah. They're not very accepting at times.
No, very very much so. The beast of caddy management is very stressful. I see it with all the managers. That's why we've gone through 100 managers, because it's never easy.
112.
Yes, at least. That was my train of thought. It's like I try to be really cordial to them now, but it's almost like you cannot keep up with the revolving door.
No, you got to.
That's what I was thinking about.
Walk on eggshells always.
Yeah, I'm nice to them, but to try to develop a relationship with them, and you know that they're going to be gone in a few months, is just, you know.
Very true.
Yes.
I'll be honest. I think we have a very solid group of guys now.
Our current caddy management, I think, is phenomenal.
The best that's ever been.
Yeah. It's good.
There was a lad, so when I first started here a little over 20 years ago, there was a guy called Len, and he might have worked for the CIA. That was the word on the street. Nice, lovely lad. Really nice guy.
Apparently, he passed all the caddy management interviews, which is not the same process. Yeah.
he was there on a Friday, and he was meant to open the office on a Saturday.
See you later.
And everyone turns up on a Saturday. Len's not there. The other managers are calling his house. No answer. Someone goes to his place on the Sunday. He'd moved out. On the Friday night, he'd
no trail.
Put everything in his truck, his van, his car, and he just left the state. Gone. Never to be seen again.
Yeah. Well,
bye-bye.
We had a recent caddy manager do the same thing. We're not going to name names, but he was... You know, he was a very nice man. A lot of them are. They're very nice men, but he was terrible at caddy management. And the caddies, myself included, were not shy about letting him know when he was messing up. And we would do it relentlessly. And you could tell he cared about it so much. Gordon, I saw, had a few conversations with him. He was like, bro, I know exactly what you do when you go home at night. You sit there and you look over the T-sheet and you look at who's going where. And you could tell he's like, wow, yeah, that's exactly what I do. And then same thing one day. He just didn't show up, and nobody, he called the office and said, you know, I'm getting some help for myself. I'll call you in a few weeks and sayonara.
I think I remember him.
Yeah. It was not too long ago, and right. He's never been heard from again.
There was another story that a guy left mid-shift. He said, oh, listen, there's a manager training him.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, listen, my girlfriend needs to get my car because she's taking her car or blah, blah, blah to the garage. I'll be back in 5 minutes. Gone.
I remember that.
Like a fart.
That was somewhat recently, correct?
Yes.
Yes, I saw that guy.
You couldn't pay me enough to do that job. You literally could not pay me enough to do that job.
Yeah, I think I made $17 an hour. And I saw that guy you're talking about check out real quick, because it was a busy day at one of the courses, and the other manager was, you know, putting out a bunch of fires, and that guy was just sitting there trolling Instagram. He was like, or he was already over it.
I'm done.
He put forth Tinder. Yep. He put forth no effort. Like, hey, can I call Mike Zabel for you, or can call Gordon? No, he was like, I'm done. I'm just gonna sit here and, you know, until it's over.
Okay, so you lasted what, 10 weeks?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah. And I told them that I was leaving, and I moved on, and then I think I tried to get rehired real quick. That following spring as a caddy, and they put it forth to corporate in Jacksonville, and they said no.
They blacklisted you?
Yes. And I was like, you think that I'd be a good manager, yet you don't think I'd be a good caddy. That's kind of strange to me, but I kind of understand, because I think there's a lot of former managers that are caddying. A lot of jump ship.
It's so common, because like you said, with the money you were making, they look at us and they see what we walk off the course with, and they're like, wow, they're making a lot more money as a caddy than I am as a manager, and they're working 4.5-5 hours. I'm here working 10-hour days. Why am I doing this? Why wouldn't I just caddy?
And that's as a caddy, you have to look after one person. As a manager, you've got 200 or so caddies to look after.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And you're dealing with all sorts of nutters as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've seen Zabo go off in managers.
That one in particular, I mean,
made the guy cry.
Well, he had it coming. Let's be honest. I mean, sometimes when you mess up egregiously, you're going to be called
I know a lot of people, and I heard that particular manager is still currently in a mental institution in a straitjacket. And
you may not be kidding.
Zabo put that morning. Zabo pushed like, him over the
he's
edge.
He's like that. Ace Ventura. He's writing Zabo on the wall, and it'll Finkel and Einhorn. He's up there writing Zabo over and over.
Attaboy, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, you had it coming.
So, what we'll do before we move on to the break? Just tell us quickly. When did you get back to becoming?
I came back. My wife and I moved to New Mexico for a little while.
You moved to Mexico?
New Mexico.
Oh, New Mexico. Okay.
New Mexico. We worked at a ski resort for a couple of years, and I moved back to Santa Cruz, and I saw an ad on KSBW that they needed caddies. It was post-COVID, so they were really beating the bush.
They upped their game from Craigslist. They went for the major local news network.
And so what I was doing at that ski resort, I was a concierge at a fancy hotel, and so there was another ad for Palmero, Casa Palmero. Mm. So I had to make a choice. Do I want a caddy or be a butler at the Casa Palmero? And I actually thought about it for 5 minutes, which makes me cringe to this day, that would actually be a decision.
You know, at Casa Palmero, it's an open bar from 5 till 7, though.
It is.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Mm. So what year was that?
That was 2019. No, I'm sorry. That was 2021.
Yeah, right. And when you got here, I remember you when you started. He's an absolute workhorse. This guy, when he was caddying on the resort, would work all the time, nonstop.
Yeah, I was trying to get after it, and that actually really paid off, making connections and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, getting a base of regulars and getting in with other caddies and stuff, because networking is huge at the resort.
Well, talking about connections, I think all the listeners should definitely connect to the Big Game Golf app. That's our sponsor, and here's a quick message. Every golfing group has the guy who coordinates the weekly game or the buddies trip. If you're that guy, you'll be very familiar with the pain and frustration scheduling, managing, and scoring your game. Why not make your life easier by downloading the Big Game Golf app and start saving time and hassle today? Whether you're a caddy wanting to engage more with your golfers, a pro shop wanting to get out of running the weekly game, or you're that guy wanting to streamline the process, Big Game Golf is here to help you. The app has over 30 games, so there is no need to keep playing the same boring games with your mates week in and week out. The app is also fully integrated with the USGA, so every player's handicap will automatically be incorporated, which saves time and, more importantly, sandbagging. Simply choose your game, keep score, and the app will do all the calculations with live scoring, leaderboards, and contest results. Big Game Golf will even text players the final results. So start improving your golf experience today by downloading the app, Big Game Golf. Regular listeners will remember that Zabo apparently said that his short game was as good as any PGA Tour professional, right?
Well, you got to bring up old shit.
Well, because you just pulled another clanger. During the break, the boys and I just went and watched a penalty shootout in the Champions League quarterfinals. Zabo said, "Where are they kicking it from?" I went 12 yards. He goes, "Oh, I could score that." So
in the Champions League, give me a kick. I think I could score.
Yeah. 10 out of 10.
Brilliant. Chris, you become a caddy. This is what, 2019 then?
2021. I came back after the COVID. My wife and I moved back to Santa Cruz from New Mexico and saw the ad and replied to it. And then I called. I got a call from a former manager whom I did work with, who's no longer with us. Surprise, surprise. And she said, "You know, come on down." I said, "Well, what about the no manager to caddy rule?" And apparently they waived it for.
We need bodies.
We need bodies.
We need shoulders.
Yes. So I showed up and started caddying. Just got right at it. Yeah. It was right on from day one.
And
yeah,
you just rediscovered your love for caddying right away?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I genuinely enjoy it and got right into it. And I mean, I still don't know what I was doing the first few days out there.
Mm-hmm. Really?
You'd need a lot of course knowledge, I think.
A little learning curve.
Yeah. There's a little learning curve. Especially, I remember being at Spanish Bay, one of the first one of the first loops out there and these super grindy guys. And thank God I had Ruben with me, and I owe him a case of beer for that one.
Oh, man, he knows that course better than anybody.
Yes, yeah. And he was an absolute gentleman, helped me out and whatnot, that he walked me through it. I remember the first few loops, like going around that course and stuff, they were a little weird.
Cause, yeah, for sure.
There's some funky courses, and they do kind of throw you to the wolves. I mean, you get like an observation loop or whatever. That's what we call it when we're kids, an observation loop. And they put you out. I think you were talking about it, G, that you had one recently, somebody shadowing you. And they're paying customers, you know, so you're out there kind of making it up and winging it from at the beginning. That's a little bit of a weird situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm critical in one way, but the other side of it, I was 13 when I started. So now I'd played the golf course for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
But I look at, you know, the guys that I was with, and I was thinking, I guess you have your own perception that you're super mature and you can handle it, but you got to learn somehow.
Exactly.
So I guess it's just Russian roulette for that.
Yeah.
That poor guy that's going to pick you up off the bench.
Get out there and do it. That's,
I heard of a guy. I heard of a kid going from one. I'm sure you guys heard the story. Going from 1 to 5 at Spyglass.
Not surprising. I haven't heard that, but that's not surprising. You know,
walked off the first green and walked over to 5 and like par 3, 165.
Wow, this round went by pretty fast.
I did that at the country club. I went from number 3 to 18. So I was 20 Quick years loop. In. They were like, this doesn't seem right. And I was like, oh no, this is the championship tee. Yeah. And the guy's like, what, they play it over the road? They usually block off the road for the championship one. Let's go round, boys. Just clueless. But did you find the other caddies were very helpful?
Yes. I knew a bunch of them from previously being a manager. And the ones I recognized, I tried to, you know, immediately go up to them and talk to them and reintroduce myself and
for
whatnot.
Sure.
Yeah. And I tried not to step on any toes because I know it down there can be a pack of wolves at times. And so I feel like I did things the right way when I came back and you know, tried to ingratiate myself with the fellow caddies and stuff and to network with guys and to not break any rules and whatnot. Yeah. So I felt like the other caddies were very helpful. And if you're polite and you're not arrogant and again, play by the rules and do the right thing, people probably generally seem to be receptive of my being back.
I remember working you one day, and I think I was like, did you used to be a manager here?
You look familiar.
And you're like, yeah.
And I
think you remembered who it was, and I explained what it was. It was your last day.
Yeah, you told me the story, sure.
I told you the story. Like, I'll tell you what, it was in the 12th at the big course walking off.
Yes,
par 3.
I recall.
That's when it was. And I was like, I kind of recognize your face because you mentioned the print press.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
That's classic.
And then I remember the story after he told me. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I do remember you now. Yeah. But there's so many caddies. It's like, oh, I remember this guy. I remember that guy. And then I just reintroduced myself to the ones I remembered and whatnot.
What's your favorite type of job?
Favorite type of job at the resort would be a good player single.
Really?
Yeah, easily. Even if the money's a little less, 2 shots a hole.
He's not a lifer caddy like us, Zabo.
I'll take the hack and the $500 every day.
I've become also doing a little bit of the pro stuff that I've done recently. I've become increasingly spoiled.
I've found that with guys who make the transition from club caddying to tour caddying, they want the caliber of golf. When they come back and actually do loops, they're like, I can't do this hack stuff anymore.
It's a weird transition for sure.
Yeah. I'll take 4 hacks. Every single day that I have deep pockets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how bad your golf is. Just don't, as Ray would say, don't thank me, pay me.
Yeah,
don't blame me, pay me.
I had a golden one this past weekend. These guys from Dallas, they come back every year, and first off the big course, both weekend days, and they're pretty good players. You know, probably 8 to 10 handicap and generous and just super fun to be around, a lot of camaraderie, and that was a very fun job. So I mean, I'm not opposed. I will gladly do doubles. The ones I try to avoid is 4 caddies. I hate doing 4 caddy jobs.
Me too.
Agreed.
I'll avoid them at all costs. Terrible. Unless they're super cool guys and I can kind of push them around as opposed to them pushing, because what I do is, guys, I'll kind of like give one guy too much time.
You really need low maintenance guys when you have 4 caddies, because the high maintenance guys, and you get 4 high maintenance guys on 4 caddy, it's a nightmare.
I find them exhausting, you know, especially if you have them for several days. I remember doing one for like 3 or 4 days. I think I picked them up at Del Monte, so it was a 4-day job. And then I counted up all the shots they hit, because they weren't very good players. That's 400 shots. Yeah, over the course of that time, it was like, oh my goodness.
I'd seen a lot of golf.
I'd explain how many shots, you know, that's exhausting to me.
Yeah, you're on suicide watch. No, but you have to be firm with some people and just tell them, is my job meant to rake all the bunkers too? Because it's literally, it's not. If you're there, I'll do it. But if you're not, you know,
help me out.
Yeah, help us out.
I find that what they don't understand is they're getting 25% of a caddy.
Yes.
Right?
I've never ever thought that. That's a wonderful way of putting that.
It's true. It's true. They're getting a quarter of the level of service.
Yes. Yeah. And I find myself, I think I have a good work ethic and I want to give them 100%, but you can't. And so I get pushed around.
I told it a few years ago, but I distinctly remember having a double, actually. And it was a husband wife. She was super highly strung. And she starts mother, father, and the husband before the second green.
Beautiful.
Oh, and geez. I was like, what's her problem? And she then goes, he's hogging the caddy. He's hogging the caddy. It's not all about you, Bill. It's not all about you. I was like, wow.
Been there before.
I actually love caddying. Now that you mentioned, I really do like caddying for women because I find that you can that you can, if you pay attention to them, you'll win them over really quick. Don't let Bill hog you.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who they are. Do your job, and you win anyone over. You
know what I mean? Good point.
You know, we only have about 1.4% of women listeners, so I don't really care.
Yeah,
I'll just tell it how it is. So
I really think it's closer to 5%.
I think they're really easy. So once you charm them a little bit, it's the rest of the day is cake.
Uh-huh. Chris Rose out there spitting game.
Well, it helps that right now he is currently caddying for a girl who got conditional status on the LPGA tour.
Yes.
So we got to come to that subject because what gave you the bug? Because we had a women's open. You happened to pick up a really good bag. Who did you caddy for?
Yeah. Like, how old are you?
I'm 55.
Right, so it's you're 55, recently back into caddying, and now we find you. Hey, you want to come on the podcast and talk about caddying on tour?
Yeah. So
which is pretty crazy. So
how they
go? Well. Yeah. So we had the women's open at the big course last year. We did. We had the women's open.
It was pretty awesome.
Would you stop it with your misogynistic women bashing? 5% of our listeners are women. You need to recognize.
1.4.
So how did you link up with, who did you care for? Benny?
Benedetta Maresco. Okay.
What was that again? Sorry.
Benedetta Maresco.
Oh, Benedetta Maresco. Oh, Italian.
Take
it easy.
A.K.A. Benny.
Benny. Right.
Yes.
So how'd you link up with her?
So the story goes, I was in Indonesia on a surf trip, and I got an email from her that was asking me to caddy for her in the U.S. Open. And I think she got my information from the USGA, who got it from, I think, from Margo Daniels at Pebble Beach, who probably got it from the caddy office. I think there was a list of us. I think Charlie Parker was on it, Casey. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the other guys got bags.
I didn't get my call. Did you get a call? Yeah. You guys have listened to the podcast.
You know why? Because one of you doesn't believe that there's a U.S. Open, women's Open, and the other one wants the $500 hacks.
We didn't make that list. So you get the email from her.
I get the email from Benny, and I replied instantly, yes, I'd love to do it. I kind of was hoping that something like that would come up, but I didn't really know how to go about it. I replied yes, but then when I was in Indonesia, I still wasn't coming back for a few weeks, and I was like, oh my God, I got to get home because I got to see the course, because obviously it's a USGA setup, and it's a completely different animal than it is for resort play. I got home and then went and luckily was able to pick up a single loop the day before it closed. Had a practice round with a different player, a different pro. Benedetta and I met on what would have been Tuesday of the Open, did a 9-hole practice round, got along famously, another 9-hole practice round on the following Wednesday, and then Thursday we teed up. I think we were morning the first day, and when I got out on the first fairway, I just, what on earth am I doing out here?
Super nervous.
I was super nervous, deer in the headlights, imposter syndrome. Uh-huh. What did I sign up for? Yeah, I'm walking up one on Pebble, just going, after she hit her tee shot, like, oh no, how do I get out of this?
What do I do? What do I do?
I hope she's not listening. I think she trusts me now. Yeah. So she played fantastic that day. She shot 70 with zero bogeys, and
2 under to start an open. That's pretty good.
Yeah, she's 22. She had not turned pro yet. She just finished.
Oh, so she was playing as an amateur.
Yeah, she was an amateur. She had just finished playing for the University of Alabama. Mm-hmm. She shot 2 under. Name's on the leaderboard and whatnot. Next day, this is kind of another story of the deer in the headlights thing. I'm driving. There's a back way in from the main gate, the Pebble, and you come down behind 14 green. And I remember driving down that hill, boys, and I saw a gallery. It must have been Coe or Korda. Those are female golfers. G and
okay. Nelly Korda.
They're out on 15. There's a huge gallery on 15, and you can see 15 coming down the hill. And it was the same thing I felt on that first day on one. I'm just like, I wanted to turn around. I'm like, what am I doing?
Really? Wow. Even the second day.
Second day, I got it again. I think it's also because she played so well.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, we're
pressure. There's more pressure. Yeah.
We're gonna, you know, we stand a good chance of making the cut. And we went off the back, and as you guys know, Pebble from the back is a really different golf course. Mm-hmm. And that 10th hole played the highest stroke average for the tournament. It was like 4.5, 4.6. Mm-hmm. I never think of 10 as being that hard, but it's a difficult hole from the...
They play from the white tees in that hole, or how did they play?
Gold.
They play from the gold tees, and they're like 430 yards.
It was legit, yeah. Jeez. And she hits a good drive.
Well, you think it's long?
For a woman's tour event, yeah, that's
in the
long.
Wind,
yeah. Or 4:30,
and U.S. Open conditions.
To you guys, come on!
The course was difficult.
So does Benny hit it pretty far?
Yeah, she probably carries her driver 250 or so, okay. 260.
So 4:30 ain't that far.
It's not that far. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Okay. It's a pitch and putt. It's like your place.
Get out of here. We're talking about the Women's Open right now.
We probably would have made an ace on it, huh?
Pay attention.
So easy.
So second day.
So we start on the back, and all of a sudden, just like the wheel, she doubles. You hadn't made a bogey the first day. Doubles 10.
Oh, she doubled the first hole?
Yeah, and it felt like the wheels are coming off. I'll give you the bridge version. Shoots 41.
41?
40 or 41.
Whoa.
And so now it's like it feels a little bit like a train wreck. We can't stop
behind the eight ball. Exactly. But you're coming into the front nine on your scoring holes.
So we come into the front nine. Bogey's one.
Oh no!
I know. So it came down to like we had to. I was kind of watching. I didn't talk to her about the leaderboard or whatnot. And I was watching the jumbotrons and stuff for the cut line. And I think we were pretty close to like being right on it. And we were going into. And she made like a 60-foot putt on six for birdie.
Mm-hmm.
And we still got to go, you know, 7, 8, 9 in the wind in the late afternoon. Eight was a huge log jam. Took us like 45 minutes to tee off. Jeez. It felt like, and super
normal
windy,
day.
Cold. Yeah. And she hit I think she hit 3-wood 4-iron or hybrid 4-iron. It was down below the tees.
Mm-hmm.
The 4-iron lands right. It was remarkable how many of the women hit it right that week. Like, because you had to come back, they made the whole hazard yellow. So
And
the drop zones were just full of divots.
Gotcha.
And it's like every time you get up there, there'd be a whole group of people down there looking on the right. And so, not to take credit, but I was just like left, 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 left. And she hits it, you know, the bunker on the left that guards that front left. She hits the mm-hmm. hill right there with the 4-iron, kicks dead right.
Nice.
2 feet short, uphill. Birdies, and now I'm like
2 feet short of the hole.
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah. So
great read.
I'm like, yeah, straight uphill. That's the other thing. She putts wonderfully. She had 11 putts on the front nine the first day, 24 putts total. So the putter, I just got out of her way. You know, the question should ask like speed. You know, mostly.
Oh, so she read pretty much all
mostly her own. Like our system is now that we work together a lot. We'll both read them, and she'll call me in if she needs me. Otherwise, let Picasso paint. You know, just stay out
for
of
sure.
Way.
Don't for sure.
If she had 11 putts on the front nine at Pebble.
Yeah, you can't argue with that.
Get out of the way. So the birdie's that, and then we got to go to nine, which is a tricky hole. Obviously, nine's a beast of a hole, and she hit it in the rough. The rough was brutal, and she decided to chip out, which I thought was a great idea. We were left in the left rough because they shaved the right side of nine down really tight. And you could easily go into the ocean if you hit that downslope. And she, like, I think I should just chip out. I'm like, great, because I knew where we were in the cut line. So she chips out, makes a five. Make the cut, and I was elated for her more than anything. Mm-hmm. And there was also a wedding for my in-laws that I really didn't want to go to in L.A. that weekend.
Perfect. Sorry, bro. Yeah, made the cut.
Yeah, so sorry to my dear wife, Vicky, that I was like, I can't, I got to stay up here and caddy for Benedetta this
work
weekend.
Work is work,
exactly.
I mean.
Yeah. So made the cut, and then it was kind of neat on Saturday to go off at late to mid-morning on a major just as a twosome, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she played fairly decent that day, but it didn't score. I think she shot 76, but it felt like a 72
because
the conditions were tough again. And then the last day, it felt like it was just kind of like house money. And I thought 72 would be a good number. She shot 73. We get to the clubhouse, and there was the media darling that week was this Irish lass called Ain Donegan, I think is how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. And she was all over the TV. They just seemed to love her. Benedetta had a flight to catch. She leaves and goes to catch her flight and jumps in her courtesy car with her parents. Her parents had come out. She bails to go get her flight, and I'm watching the scoreboard, and all of a sudden Donegan bogeys, and it comes down to she has to make a 15-foot putt on 18 to tie for the low amateur. And all, they're not showing it. I can just watch the ticker in the hospitality. And she missed the putt. And
so you got low am.
She won the low amateur.
So she, did she come back?
Yes. She wasn't going to. I was the one that called her and broke the news to her. And I think David Stivers actually called her, and who's the president
of
Pebble Beach, and was like, this is nothing you want to miss. And then it got, it was surreal because I was on the 18th green at the Open.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, all the watching Ellison Corpus one come in real time. And like the USGA just kind of whisked us through the crowd. And they're like, you got to get on the stage. And
that's cool. That.
It was really neat. Really cool experience. But also very like intoxicating. Like, I don't want to do anything but this. This was such a cool week.
So right away you were thinking, like, I'd like to do this.
Yes. I want to do this more. So I went to, before she left for the airport, I said, hey, I will do Q school with you pro bono. If you should get a card, then you can
pro bono. Then, wow. Zabo's like,
he really hasn't been caddying for that long.
No, but my theory was that I really, as I said, I really, really enjoyed it. And that if she got her card, then she would realize that we're a good fit and she could hire me.
But it's not pro bono anymore. She went to Q school.
We went, the first stage was in Palm Springs in August. I'm not sure whose idea that was. It's like 120.
Mm.
And I felt more like a ring man than a caddy at times. Yeah. She cruised through that, that was a kind of weird experience that they have a rules meeting the night before, and there's 300 to 400 women in this room, this huge conference room. And I'm like, how many of these women are getting through? Right. It's like, this
five?
Is absurd. Yeah. Yes. I think out of that room, five people might have gotten cards.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. So she gets through, she played great stage one, gets through. Stage two was in Florida, Venice, Florida. She didn't play very great and the very good, excuse me, in the first couple rounds. Needed a 67 the final day, shot 66.
Wow. Yeah, that's great.
Yes, and I thought 69 was going to be the number. And she birdied like the last three coming in, and it was, we needed the six. We needed every one of them. Mm-hmm. She's phenomenal. And then we went to Mobile, Alabama, which is called the Q Series, which is now professional.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up getting a partial card. It's still, you know, it's 108 holes. It's a grind.
Yeah.
So you play. So
it's like top 20 get cards, right?
Top 20, and then I think the next 25 get partials, and she's in that next group, like the middle of that next group.
Gotcha.
And what tour is that? LPGA?
LPGA, yeah.
So she's going to play full-time on Epson and then probably get into a few LPGA events?
That's what it looks like now, yeah.
Nice.
And the pressure in Q school was palpable. I mean, it was crazy.
I bet.
From the U.S. Open the first 2 days and then that, it was just like, that is everything they say it is and more. I'm sure you guys have heard stories, mm-hmm. and the listeners have heard stories about what Q school is like, and it's all that and more.
So since then she's had a lot of downtime, some off time, and you've caddied elsewhere, right? You've caddied some Korn Ferry events or PGA
kind of
events?
Things have just kind of taken off for me, Mike. I caddied for a young guy named William Mao who played at Pepperdine, won the national championship there with the gala, and I picked him up at the PBI, the Pebble Beach Invitational in November, and he played well and made the cut and just kept in touch with them, and I went to
South America, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Argentina and Chile with him for two legs of the Korn Ferry Tour.
Or as we say back home, Chile.
Chile, exactly.
Did he have some success down there?
He did. He was T13 in Argentina, and then this was a cool one. He was T5 in Chile, and he played phenomenal. He shot 28 on the back nine on Saturday. The kid is a talent.
That's awesome. So let me ask you, you're on the Korn Ferry Tour in two different countries, right?
Sure.
What is the caddy hospitality like over there? Do they have Chipotle? Do they bring the good carne asada at the caddy hospitality?
The caddy hospitality.
Garbage.
I never went to the one in Argentina. That tells you everything you need to know. I lived off of bananas and blue Powerade. I must have ate like four bananas a day. And then the one in Chile, I went and I think they gave us like pasta primavera that was straight out of a box. And I went once and I was like, that's okay.
Powdered food, just add water.
I'll just eat some more bananas.
It's, and here we are at the AT&T, Caesar serving us ahi tuna.
Yeah.
It's us. biggest question I have to ask, the courtesy driver that she had for senior parents, was it a short ginger man with a beard?
It could have been. Yeah.
I don't remember that one that week. It could have been. There's so many people, tough to keep track of.
One quick story about the Chile story. This was pretty fun. It was really neat. We were the second to last group on Sunday. So we got to wait around until 2:30 to play, mm-hmm. which is a trip. And then we go off, and the conditions were tough, and nobody was moving. We were two back from the leaders, and they were the group behind us, obviously, and we couldn't make a move. Nobody was moving. We were two back on 18. It's par five. And William's a very aggressive player, and he hits the ball a mile. He drove it into some trees on the left. It's a par five, as I said. And so the scenario is he's got a good lie, but there's a tree, about a big bushy tree about 30 yards ahead of us, and we can't see the green. There's a water hazard front right of the green. Mm-hmm. Our number was 205 front edge, 215 pin. I think it was 10 paces on front left, and the wind is hurting off the left. So now the decision is to go for it or to lay up. It's not rocket science on the decision. There's pretty much two options. And we got into this 10-minute discussion, of which he really seemed to want my opinion, and I was a long 10 minutes. And did I think I talked to you about it, Gordon.
Yeah.
He didn't know what to do, and he wanted my opinion, and he was like, and you're at this point where you could potentially win a golf tournament, which is...
He's two back of the lead.
Two back. Okay. So an eagle puts him tied. We chip it out. And I've already got the 54 in my hand.
So you want him to play the safe
very
play.
Much so. Okay. And do you go for it or not? I mean, I've seen this kid hit some ridiculously difficult shots.
But then again, there's lots of ways to make four and have a really good finish.
Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, we went back and forth about that. And that was kind of surreal being in that moment of, like, you know, trying to help him make this decision in real time on TV cameras and all that.
What'd you do?
What would you do?
I'm with you. I at that level, there's lots of ways to make four. Eagle, if you're the second to last group and you're two back and there's people behind you and it's a relatively easy par five, I would say, you know, go for a really good finish, lay it up, and make your four.
Yeah.
What did he choose points. To do?
He hit it out.
He chipped out, didn't he?
Yeah. And but, hit know, a wedge on the green. And
G would have said, let's hit your five iron, bro.
100%.
Five iron.
Or maybe even a six.
Seven iron for him. But
seven iron.
Oh, there. Yeah. Then.
It's a seven iron all day.
So did he make four, though?
No, he made five. He didn't. The wedge came up short. But he would have had to rope this hook. It had been like a 35-yard hook. I mean, not a draw. Like, legit.
Yeah.
And it was a demanding shot. I mean, as I said, I've seen him make some crazy shots. And if anybody could do it, it could be him. I'd love to go back and try it. But
he's going to be lying in his deathbed and
thinking about that.
Remember that time?
I should have hit the 7 iron, but I hit the 54-degree wedge.
But the end goal is to get your card, your PGA card.
Yeah, and real high finish.
Yes.
Accumulate the money and the points.
Exactly.
So what's your future with him, or is it with her?
That's a tough question, right? Because what happens if this kid wants you to continue to caddy for him and he gets his PGA Tour card? I mean, obviously...
He called me at the beginning of the year after the PBI and trying to pick my brain about it, and I think he was kind of like feeling me out to see what I would do, but my loyalty's kind of to her right now. Not kind of, it is. And I feel like she's the one that brought me to the dance, and I committed to her for a year.
Wait till your first bad tournament. You know, you'll no longer be the dance.
Did you commit like in a verbal agreement, or do you have a contract?
No, no
contracts.
Just verbal agreement. Yeah.
What planet are you living on?
No, I mean, if it was PGA or Epson, obviously I'm going to go to the PGA Tour. I think I was just filling in for William. I did those two tournaments with him, and he's got a guy that he regularly uses and whatnot. So.
But has he had – I mean, that's pretty good success in two weeks caddying for him.
The ball's in his court. Yeah, three, actually. So it's
what happens if William says, all right, I want you to drop her and come caddy for me full time?
I really know the answer.
I'm going with Benny.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She might hear this someday.
we'll let the listeners know in a few
weeks.
She's
on a short list for the Olympics. She's one of four on the Olympic list.
Wow. Chris Rose with the gold medal.
She's already had me do all the paperwork.
So. Who's she playing? Is she?
Italian.
Is she playing for Italy?
She's Italian.
She's not playing for Alabama.
That's a good point. Right. So Chris Rose could have an Italian gold medal.
I don't know if she'll get in, but she's one of four on the list, so I'm sticking with Benny.
All right, my advice, get the Olympics under your belt, bit of experience, move on.
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes. Because honestly, you're only as good as your last week.
Yes.
And I'm excited for you. And are you over club caddying? They're like, this is what you want to do going
I would
forward.
Prefer to do this, yes, yeah, but I'm not over club caddying.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
it must be a great... Like, when I was growing up in the 90s, there were several guys at Turnberry that caddied in tour, and they would come back. Because the money wasn't as much as it is now, but they loved the weekends at Turnberry. And it just seeing the boys, meeting the Yanks, you know, making a wee bit of beer money.
Yeah.
I think it must be fun for you to come back. And everyone probably is like asking you, all the good guys will be like, hey, how's it going? What are you up to? And then
it was the first few back were a little bit of a shocker. I remember a guy at the Wii course, we're on two and we're at the bottom tee box, and he hits a five iron you know, one of those guys, you tell him to hit it 195, pulls out a 5-iron, you know, yeah, you can't hit it 170. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, come on. Yeah. But not even 160. He skies the ball into the tree that overhangs the tee box.
I should have hit my hybrid.
And no. So, yeah, then he says to me, you know, he kind of alluded that I didn't tell him that tree was in play. This is one of my first tournaments there. Back, and I'm just, I mean, first rounds, excuse
over
me,
it.
Back. And I'm just like, dude, no. And then we get to four, and he trickles one into the drink on four, you know, into the dunes after I told him to, you know, to stock 235 at the Rainbird box. And he, why am I not hitting my driver? And I was like, we're not doing this all day, dude. Yeah. I just got back from, you know, caddying in the US Open.
I've never met a golfer better than what they thought they were.
Yeah, for sure.
And even 100%. A tour.
Even 100%.
For sure. So to go back to your question, I would rather do the tour thing. I've been enjoying the travel so far. Just got back from Savannah for another Corn Ferry tournament. And just seeing cool cities like that. And
I heard your wife's enjoying it as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's another interesting point, because you're probably at an inch. How old are your kids?
Theo is 26, soon to be 27. Nick is 25.
So yeah, that makes it a lot easier. Very like I would love to do it, but I just wouldn't. I would not leave my family for, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I mean, as having a 7-year-old, there's no way.
You'd struggle to leave the Ubering. Let's be honest.
Well, I could probably still Uber on the road if I was caddying.
You ever have a rental car in Georgia doing Uber?
No, I'd take my car anywhere I went. But
yeah,
if the right opportunity was to come along, I'd consider it. But it would have to be very lucrative, because like right now, you're hoping to make it, right? Club caddying right now is probably more lucrative than what you're doing.
More lucrative, but humble brag, the first cut I missed was Georgia. So
you've been making cuts, making paychecks,
but yeah. I know that's not reality, really. Yeah. It's also thankfully I've had really good players. So yes, the club caddying is way more a sure thing and more lucrative.
But the potential for big paydays is there.
Caddies, a lot of caddies, Gordon's probably going to try to slap me here, but I'm honestly not in it for the dough with the pro thing, because I find that I'd love the buzz of it. I love the competition of it.
No, I get it.
It's pretty cool.
I get that part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That part of me, even if I was like, okay, I make a little bit of money and I've been able to sock enough away. And as I said, the kids are out of the house. I'm in a good financial position to do it. If I had young kids or whatnot, no way.
If it's not Benny or William, who's your dream job? Who'd you love to work for?
Alive or dead?
But one of each.
Oh, my. Does it have to be a PGA pro?
No, it could be anybody. It could be Michael Jackson.
That brings me, there's a better question, a follow-up question. But
can I caddy for Mike at the Hay?
That is your dream, Lou,
buddy. I want to see a couple of aces.
You would, too.
Oh, man, that's a tough call. Let me get back to you on that in a minute.
Would you rather caddy on the LIV Tour or the PGA Tour?
PGA.
Why?
100%.
Because you're not in it for the money.
Ah, there you go.
I'm a traditionalist, too.
Ooh.
Oh, he's a traditionalist. Yeah. Traditional being 12 elevated events for $20 million, and, you know, come on.
You and me, we'd do the 54 holes. 100%. Yeah, a little more money.
All right, I got my answers. I'm going to go with Scheffler.
Scheffler?
Everybody tells me I look like Ted Scott. I get that.
I could see that.
I get that at least once a day. I got a guy in Argentina who couldn't speak English just point at me and say Ted Scott. So
nice.
I'll kick Ted Scott off the bag and take Scheffler.
I've had people say I look like Scheffler. I went, no. Scheffler looks like me.
Ooh, yeah. I'm older.
So you and I could do it. We'll pull it off.
I tell you what, we turn up on the first tee. That would be funny. That'd be a good video, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Scheffler and Ted Scott. Yeah, let's do it.
Put it in the tee sheet.
Yes.
Over the Hay.
Scheffler.
You got your footwork down?
Oh, man. Oh, I could do that. Yeah. No problem.
Sideways hat.
Okay, boys, well, that brings us to an end of another episode. Chris, many thanks for turning up.
Yes, thank you, Chris.
Thank you guys for having me. I love the podcast. And
anyone you want to say hello to?
No.
No shout-outs? Not even to Vicky?
Hi, Vicky.
All right, I'll give her
a shout-out. Benny. I mean, Benny, for bringing you that nice nice loop.
Yeah.
Hopefully for years to come.
Yeah.
But Zabo, any shout-outs for you?
Yeah, I got a shout-out. Actually, a podcast listener at Caddy for a Minute, Will Ellard. He just texted me not too long ago, and he was like, I'm playing Estancia tomorrow in Arizona. He's like, what should I pay my caddy? So he's just wondering what a good gratuity was.
A lot.
And he's like, and he said, you know, the podcast is getting better and better each episode. So he's listening to them all. I said, as a matter of fact, we're recording one right now. So shout out to you, Will. Thanks for listening.
Excellent. Okay, well, I don't have any shout-outs this week. Well, actually, no, the guys I had today, Evan, Mark, Will, and Nick. It was a pleasure, boys. What are you laughing at, lads?
Nick, you were memorable. It just took him a minute. Yeah.
Brilliant. For all the listeners, many thanks for listening. There are 130 previous episodes. If you are a new listener, please rate, review. It's always good for future listeners.
And share.
Chris, safe travels. Zabo, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Get out there, enjoy your golf, but more importantly,
you're not that good.